My name is Jill, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jill.
Hey, Jill.
For those who care, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer.
Let's do it.
God,
grant us serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference.
Alcoholics Anonymous wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, we ask you to please silence your cell phones, and also we respectfully ask all those present to please refrain from unnecessary moving around. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices a spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism based on AA simple actions. I'll now read the preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversies. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. I'm going to have to move this a little bit. I don't see as well as I used to. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation, ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we're discussing the first part of step 12. And I would like to welcome our panel tonight, which is Trent and David. And I'll let them tell you who they are.
Go ahead. You will say something about me?
I like it.
My name's Trent. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Trent.
I'm able to be here tonight. Great to be sober. And thanks for this group asking us out here to speak tonight. A little bit about myself. Like an hour?
Or 2 minutes.
Okay. I live in between Pungo and Sandridge, which is why it took me an hour and 10 minutes to get here tonight. Got here like 2 minutes ago. I've been sober since July 5th, 1990. I got sober in Florida. And sober at the beach now. Lived there almost 24 years, a little over 24 years. Home group is the NEMA Parkway group, Alcoholics Anonymous on Thursday nights. Come out and see us. Best AA meeting besides this one in Tidewater. Thursday nights at 7:30. And yeah, just glad to be here tonight. Good to see you. Thanks.
Thanks, Trent. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
I'm a member of the New Day group and the NEMA Parkway group in Virginia Beach. My sobriety date is July 14, 2002. I got sober at Williamsburg in a treatment center, and I've been in Virginia Beach ever since. Trent's one of the first people I met in AA in Virginia Beach. I'm grateful for that, and I'm looking forward to hearing him tonight. Thanks.
Thank you. Now, what we do is I'm going to start by reading a paragraph or two, and each of the panels will share on the paragraph read tonight. The first reading is on page 89, and it starts with practical experience shows that nothing will so much as ensure immunity from drinking as intense work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is the 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you. To have a host of friends, this will be the experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the right spot in our life. And I should have read step 12 first, and that is, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Okay. Well, I'll introduce myself every time, I guess. Trent Alcoholics.
Hey, Trent.
I like that passage. I'll just give you a quick thing. I never prepare for these things, never. This is totally extemporaneous. My friend Dave wrote down notes, and I probably will learn to do that sometime in the next 20 years or so, hopefully. But I didn't for this. But I did read that passage before I came here tonight, and what it makes me remember is the man of 1217 out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and what was happening when he did that. And I always try to bring that spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous to the people that I talk to or during the program. He used to always use the bar that if somebody talks to you about Alcoholics Anonymous, would they want to come? If they know nothing else about it. If you're their first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, would they want to come? And when I first talked to him, and I was in jail at the time, so pretty much anything would have worked. But when I first talked to him, he said, we're going to go to an AA meeting. And since my choices were jail or AA, and he was nice, I said, yeah, sure, AA. And for me, what I remember in the talk going there is that there was a chance that I might find something that I'd never seen before, which was a way to stay sober one day at a time, because he told me he had done it for a long period of time. And he seemed real happy. He seemed excited about going to meetings, even though he'd been sober just shy of 30 years at that time. It was on a Sunday morning, and he'd woke up to come down to pick up drunks out of jail and take them to meetings. And I couldn't figure out why somebody after 30 years would want to do that. And I just remember thinking, when I got to the meeting, even though I had not showered in almost 2 weeks, and I was covered in mostly my own vomit, there might have been a couple other people mixed in there, that the people in the meeting were very open and very welcoming. And that's what that passage helps me think about, that whenever I'm greeting a newcomer, I'm the first face of that AA that they see. And that I should try to carry the spirit of what this program is about to them as much as I can in that moment. So.
I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic.
Dave.
The first paragraph about carrying the message is something my first sponsor talked to me a lot about, and you know, that what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. And not to do that one-on-one with alcoholics and to do that in the meetings as well. And I always do try to do that and try and share, hoping that it will help a newcomer and they'll hear something they can identify with. The second part about the watching people recover and watching loneliness vanish is one of my favorite quotes in the book. It's been my experience. It's nothing like that. I do think some people miss that. I don't know if it's out of fear or what. I know I've sponsored quite a few guys, and a lot of them they never pick up sponsorship. And I know not everybody has different talents and different things they can do to help Alcoholics Anonymous. But my sponsor told me, you know, don't be too scared to sponsor somebody. You can't screw it up, you know. And that's been my experience, you know, that there's what I say, what was heard, and what was really meant, you know. They're all different, but you know, it works out when one alcoholic talks to another and we identify on that level. The other thing I wanted to say is that what Trent talked about, greeting people and meeting people, and that's so vital to it. And you know, the newcomers they're in a lot of places. They're in the meetings, of course. They're in treatment centers. They're in correction centers. You know, I like to get out to, I'm not in corrections at all right now because they refused me when I first got sober. I went quite far enough since my last debacle, but I've done a lot of work with treatment centers, and I think the demise of AA is greatly exaggerated, to use a phrase that I grew up with. I see a lot of people getting sober, a lot of people that come through treatment centers. A lot of people that come into their first meeting with a slip, and a lot of people that just walk through the door because they want to quit drinking, you know. And it really is a joy to watch those folks get sober and help others. Thanks.
I see.
Our next reading is on page 91. It says, see your meal along with possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how and what to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles that liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him some of your stories about your escapades. Get him to tell you some of his.
Well, just logistics first. It doesn't happen very often we get wet drunks at meetings anymore, at least not meetings that I go to. When I got sober, it was often where there'd be 5 or 10 people right off the street still drunk from the night before, and because of treatment centers and detoxes, all we don't get that as much anymore. I was told when I first got here that if a guy shows up drunk at a meeting, which actually just happened to me a couple of months ago, and he sat down at the table, and the people at the table that I was sitting at got up and left, which just shocked me. There's nobody better suited to talk to an alcoholic than the people I met in AA. Nobody. I've been comfortable around drunks my whole life because, for the obvious reasons, we have a low bar usually, or a lot of bars. But when somebody's new and they're wet, well, I'll just say this. When my first boss picked me up out of jail, he put a garbage bag around my head and cut a hole in the bottom. So logistics, if you ever get a wet one, make sure you do that in case they start throwing up. You can just shut the bag up quick and it doesn't get all over your car. That doesn't happen as much anymore, but that does work, by the way. And if you're in a meeting, make sure that the garbage can is close by, close enough to grab, which is what I did. But then in talking to him, I realized that the wet drunks or people that are just coming in Alcoholics Anonymous are looking for the same thing I was looking for, which I just shared, which is that I was looking for something different. And the way that it was conveyed to me was by the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not have read the book the first couple of weeks I was sober because I just wasn't of a mind to do that. I was too frazzled to do that. And so, for me, just being there for the person when they come, and I'm lucky I've gone to the same meetings all these years out of the beach. And so I got to see those people come in, and the ones that are ready stop, and the ones that aren't, we can put on the circus, they won't stop. It was shared with me when I first got here, and I believe it's really true for all our differences of color and age and sex and religion and everything else. There's only two kinds of people here in Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that are done and the people that aren't. And for the people that are done, it's pretty easy to 12-step them because everything sounds like a good idea, but the people that aren't done, we all sound like a bunch of idiots. So I try not to spend too much time today on, just like the big book suggests, I try not to spend too much time today on the guy that's not ready. Because if this, I can plant the seed, maybe that seed will grow in time. But there are people that are actually ready, and those are the ones I need to concentrate on.
Thanks, Trent. I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Dave.
And I was thinking back to when I was new, and I actually spent 3 months in the hospital, so I was pretty sick and inpatient. But one of the first meetings I went to when I got out was New Day, and it was a new meeting. Trent was one of the founding members, and I know the way they treated me, and that was with kindness and love. They didn't ask me to talk because I could not talk. I was too full of shame and guilt. I didn't talk about things that were, you know, inside of me at that time, but they made me comfortable, and they smiled, and they said hello, and they said come back, and they said the coffee's over there, and of course I didn't drink coffee then because coffee was bad for you. I'd do anything else you put in front of me, but I drink wine and coffee. But you know, that's the way it was, and by doing that, they allowed me to kind of open up at my own pace, and that's I think what the reading was talking about. If a guy wants to talk, I'll talk. If he doesn't, I'll smile and say welcome and say, hey, just sit down and listen. We don't ask you to do anything, you know. And that's what worked with me. You know, slowly I went from the back of the room to the near the back of the room to maybe the middle. And eventually I opened my mouth a little bit, and I got a lot of help. And, you know, something Trent was saying, the traditional 12-step call has kind of faded away. I've been sober 12 years, and I've been on four or five, and all of them were former members of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they called intergroup or called me or called a friend. You know, it's kind of ironic. We all have phones in our pockets now, but very few alcoholics come to us through the phones anymore. It's through corrections, detoxes, treatment, referrals, the courts, all kinds of places. But so I think what we do in the meetings themselves is even more important than ever, because that's where we get our first face-to-face contact with them. It's also important being friends with our friends. I'm going to put a plug in for PI and CPC as a former PI chair, you know, because those are where our newcomers are coming from. They're coming through referrals, and they're coming through the Internet, too. You know, these days people go to the Internet for anything. That's, you know, when they have a drinking problem or somebody they know thinks they have a drinking problem, they go to the Internet for help. But we're here to do the face-to-face work, and I'm grateful for that. Thanks.
Okay, the next reading is still on page 91. When you see you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of your struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of the spring. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with his own. If you are satisfied that he's a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental conditions surrounding the first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to the book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusion. If he sticks to the idea that he can control his drinking, tell him possibly he can, if he's not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
The first person that I ever heard talk about my drinking was somebody who was talking about their drinking. When I was in my first week of sobriety, there was a guy in my first home group down in Florida who had been a lawyer, and his drinking had ended up putting him in the drain pipe behind the clubhouse that I got sober, and he was living there. And about 4 months earlier, the last night he drank, he was in a thunderstorm, and a tree fell on him and broke his leg and knocked out his teeth. When he opened his mouth and talked about his drinking, he was the first person I'd ever heard in my life that talked aloud about the way they drank. And it sounded like the way I drank. I would never talk about my drinking in front of people because I was terrified of what their response would be. And most people that drank around me, who I guess were normal drinkers or didn't have the problem, would never want to be around me for very long because they were just waiting for the eventual eruption that would happen around me while I was drinking. So when I heard him talk about his drinking and all the stuff that had happened to him, I instantly related. And I started listening to people in AA meetings talking about things that I knew you were not supposed to talk about aloud. And that's what I remember early on about Alcoholics Anonymous being the thing that drew me in, was that people would talk out loud about things that were... In my house, you talked about the sports and the weather, and that was it. And you never took it beyond that. And people were talking about real things. They were talking about what their drinking did to them, what they felt about, or what they felt like before they drank, while they were drinking, the places it took them. I shared openly in a meeting when I was sober about 4 months, something I'm sure I was never going to say out loud, and it happened right at the end of my drinking. And when I shared it, thinking that something terrible was going to happen, the very next guy that shared said, yeah, I did that too, and moved right on. I mean, just like, it was like a total non-event. For me, I was shaking, and so I remember that example today, that oftentimes the people we see in Alcoholics Anonymous, this, for me, has been, and hopefully always will be, a safe place where people like us can come and do this. And I tell you what, my first home group was filled mostly old people. That's what it was then. They don't seem so old now. I just remember always just sitting there and just feeling like I didn't have to be anywhere else. It was the first time I ever felt like that in my life. I still feel that way. And thanks.
I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
The first meeting I went to the night of my sobriety day was a big book study. And it just so happened that they had cycled all the way around and they were on the doctor's opinion. And that was probably the most important hour of my life and the most important piece of literature I've ever read or heard. Because I was open, beat down enough to be open-minded enough to actually hear and to know that that fit me, that description, that I was a, you know, I had the physical craving. I always drank to get drunk once I started. There was no telling when I would stop. I'd have to pass out or run out of money, or there wouldn't be any around to steal, you know. And no matter what happened, whether I went to jail or lost a relationship or a job, I was talking myself into drinking again. And it was progressive. And I had to admit that that was me. And there was a lot of relief in that for me, to know what the problem was. I'd fought it for so long. God had put opportunities in my path to try something different, and I'd always ignored them. And always said, that's not my problem. If you guys would just leave me alone, I'd be all right, you know. Well, they eventually left me alone. And I was all alone, you know. But so, you know, when I'm talking to a newcomer, and especially somebody that wants to spend a little time outside of the meeting environment and talk, that's where I start. I start with the doctor's opinion. And I let them draw their own conclusion. But it really gives me an opportunity to tell them about my drinking, because it's all through there, you know. And I can just cite instance after instance of what my life was like and the decisions that I made and the way that alcohol changed me and changed my life. My first sponsor, I stole him like I did everything else. And I was in the center and somebody was on the phone. I said, "Who are you talking to?" He said, "My sponsor." And I grabbed the phone from him and said, "Will you be my sponsor?" I didn't have any idea who the guy was. I just knew I wanted to get an A in treatment, so I made him a sponsor. And that guy helped me so much. I didn't know it, of course, at the time. I thought I was special and unique, but he was in Williamsburg. He'd done this with hundreds of guys, spent a couple months with them, got them through the first two steps. And, you know, this is what we did. We had a date once a week to go out to dinner, and we just talked about our drinking, you know. And then he also was able to talk about what it was like not drinking, you know, and then the 12 steps and what they had done for him. And I'll be forever indebted to that guy. And of course, the only way we can pay it back is to pay it forward. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next reading is on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a malady. Talk about the condition of the body and the mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will solve some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will have your friend admitting that he has many, if not all, of the traits of an alcoholic. If his own doctor is willing to tell him that he's alcoholic, so much better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask that question if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he lived by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, it's better to use everyday language to describe the spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms or conceptions. about which you may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your convictions are.
Well, there's two parts of that for me. Number one, the second part is talking about the spiritual program to newcomers. When I was new, the first thing I heard, I still apply today, which is, God, if God runs you out of here, liquor run you back in. That's entirely true. For people that don't like that, if they don't like that part of the program and go back out there, they can find something else good for them, and if they can't, they'll be back. But the first part of that paragraph that talks about a fatal malady, since this is a weird format anyway, if you feel like it, anybody here has been sober longer than 10 years, raise your hand. So those people raise their hands, not to split us up in any way, but those people know that this thing kills like crazy. If you go to the same meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, the same couple meetings, in the last 24 years I've lived here, I've only had a couple of home groups, and I go through them every week. And so I see what happens to people. If you're new in here, you see people, and all of a sudden you don't see them anymore. You don't have any idea what happened to them. If they come back, you might recognize them, or you might not. For me, when I was new, it was all very blurry, so I wasn't really paying attention to other people. But after I've been here a while, I started 12-7 people and paying attention to sponsoring people. And I saw what happened to people who had drank like 5 years, 8 years, 11 years, have relapses that long. Most of those people do not make it back here. And they die from the craziest things. That when I see people in the paper and they've been arrested for something that makes it on the first page, I always tell people that it's usually on one phone call before I can put my finger on them. If I don't recognize them by their picture, I can pick up the phone and call one person who I know they were going to that meeting and just say, hey, what happened to them? And, well, they haven't been around for a couple of years and they killed a couple of people up on the interstate, or they killed their grandparents in a fit of rage, or they, whatever. I mean, it's hard to tell people here that when we say jails, institutions, and death, the jails and institutions most people get because they see people where you've been there yourself. Me, I have been to both. But when they talk about people dying, that was a very abstract thing to me until I started seeing it happen. Like the first guy that I sponsored, I dropped him off after a meeting at 6 o'clock. He killed himself before I got home. That was the first guy I sponsored in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I said, the guy who was my sponsor at the time, I said, I was doing everything. He said, well, there'll be somebody else. You know, that's what happens in years. Unfortunately, we're here for the living. And there's no way to talk people that I found out of their last drink. And sometimes their last drink is their last thing. And it's hard to stress to people that are not, fairly new, 5, 7, 8, 10 years of here, that's fairly new. My first sponsor said you should go out the first 5 years in public without a chaperone. So 5 years is like real new. But it's hard to stress to you guys that, the idea that you're going to pick up a white ship on Monday, I've heard that a million times where guys go, it's the weekend. It's going to be pretty out this weekend, and I'll get a white ship on Monday. And the number of those guys that don't make it back or that suffer for years and years before they die, that number is incredible. And in Virginia Beach, it's in the meetings I've been going to, which, granted, the first 10 years I lived in Virginia Beach, I went to the meeting. It was right in front of the detox. So that was the open door chapel. The Virginia Beach detox was right behind that church. The number of people that I saw die just in that 10 years. We had a meeting about it, as a matter of fact, one day, 4:30 on Saturday, and the meeting was jail. The topic of the meeting was jails, institutions, and death. Right after the meeting, a guy who was drunk with me walked right out of the boulevard, waited for a Virginia Beach bus to come by and step right in front of it. And we were all still standing in the parking lot. And that kind of stuff, when I haven't seen that all these years, it's incredible how lethal alcoholism is. And it makes me grateful that... for today,
I'm sober. And Dave, I'm an alcoholic, and those things that Trent talked about, I see most of them too. And that's one reason I love newcomers, because they take me there. They let me, they just remind me constantly how miserable my life was without Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have no idea, why I'm here tonight. I'm just grateful for it, and I know it's the grace of God, but I also believe that grace is available to everybody. It's just a matter of grabbing a hold of it, and believing in it. And, which took me a while. I was a big believer in Appendix 2. I remember when I first read I think it's in chapter 4 where the asterisk happens about 3 times, you know, and my sponsor kept saying, did you read it? No. You know, who reads those things at the bottom where it says, read appendix 2, you know. But here I am struggling with stuff too, you know. And he said, read appendix 2. So finally I did, and I said, oh, okay. All right, it's just a, you know, just a personality change. And I saw that in people in here. You could see it on their faces. I could see that they weren't miserable and lonely and unhappy like I was. And maybe there was something to it. And so I just came to believe that AA could restore me to sanity, and came to believe that if I turned my will and my life over to AA, and then in doing the rest of the steps, I found this higher power that works for me, the God of my understanding. And, you know, I also see that in Bill's story on page 13. I like to point that out to people I work with too, you know, that he took the steps, he took the simple actions we're talking about, you know. He did it in that hospital room that night and the next day with his friend. So, you know, it's been laid out. I feel very fortunate about that too, you know, because I'm an engineer, but I'm really not that great of an inventor type of guy. I'm better at taking something that's already works and figuring it out, kind of maybe making it a little better. But anyway, y'all already got it. I don't even have to figure it out, you know. And I'm lazy. I like that. My mind, when I'm working my mind, that really tires me out. So, and here I was able to just say, all right, I'll try what you're saying, you know. I'll give that a chance. And I will say, I was living in an Oxford house. I was 5 or 6 months sober, and I'd gone to DMV. I hadn't had a real license in about 10 years. I'd had a bunch of DUIs and driving on suspended. I said, I'll just go over there and see when I could get my license back and how much it's going to cost me. And I walked in, and I went to the window and told the lady that, and she kind of laughed, and she looked it up, and it turns out I was eligible to get my license back the day I got out of treatment. And that was, you know, just another little thing happened. So, you know, I'm taking my walk that afternoon, which is kind of meditation for me, and I said, well, now I got a, you know, well, once I got my license, I should say it took 5 trips to DMV to actually get the license. But I was taking a walk, I had an old beater my sister gave me, and I said, well, maybe I'll go visit my old girlfriend over in Ocean View, you know. And then I thought, you know, they'll be drinking over there. And this thought kind of came out of left field, well, I should use that car to take somebody to a meeting, you know. And I was so proud of myself for thinking that. And like I say, it came out of left field. It definitely wasn't me. But I called my sponsor in Williamsburg, because I didn't need a sponsor in Virginia Beach. I had that guy, right? I told my sponsor the story, and he said, don't call me again until you get a sponsor in Virginia Beach. He said, you need somebody. He almost drank. He would have gone out there and drank. You know, you need somebody in your face. You know, not in your face, but face to face. Somebody in your, you know, zone, so that they can check you on this kind of thing. And he was right. And so I picked the guy who shook the book at you, you know, just because he went to all the meetings I went to. And he helped me so much. He took me through the book, and he took me through the steps 3 through 9. And I'll be forever grateful for that. And we did my fifth step in the kitchen where we did the meeting, you know. And I'll never forget that. Whenever I go to a meeting there, I get to look at that kitchen and remember that that's where I did it, where I actually told somebody the things that I never thought I'd tell anybody, like Trent was talking about, you know, and how freeing that was. Thanks.
Thank you. Now we're on page 94. Outline the program of action. Explain how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you're endeavoring to help be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part of your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you're helping him. Make it plain that he is under no obligation, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he places the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he need not see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you've helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of his alcoholism. This is all too good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions.
I saw my friend Don over here earlier. Where's Don?
There he is, Don.
Oh, I saw him earlier. I was thinking about that when I walked in, but I was thinking about Stu Campbell because I was down at Easy Does It on Saturday. And he used to always say that taking a fifth step from a guy in the program, you might not end up with a friend, but you'll end up with a leg breaker. And what a leg breaker is he's the guy you call 3 o'clock in the morning when you get a leg broken. Now that you're sober, you probably won't need that, but it's good to have. And I found that to be true about the guys that had entrusted me with their fifth steps. It's a special thing. I remember my first time sharing mine and thinking that somebody had something on me that they could use. That's the way I thought at the time, that the statute of limitations had not run out on any of that stuff, and that now I had somebody that I needed to keep my eye on to make sure that they kept their mouth shut. And I realized after sharing it with him that it was a total non-event for him, because he had been doing this for so long, and he so believed in the idea of confidentiality found with this stuff, that stuff was never going to be said again. That moment, to me, is the moment I believe that the obsession for alcohol is lifted from me, because I hadn't thought about turning since then. And so I know that the power, one of the powers that in Alcoholics Anonymous is the idea of being able to, being willing, not just able, but being willing to listen to people, share things out loud, that up to that moment that they were sure they were never going to share out loud. That has an incredible curative healing power. And I believe that in all the time that I've read and listened to people read and been to big book studies and shared that book with people myself, I believe if there's one thing they conveyed in that book, there's a million things that they did, but the one thing that came through loudest to me is the idea that we will do this together. In all of the steps and all the traditions, the idea of community, and this is a special, I mean, for me it is, and I think it is for a lot of people, it's a community I would have never chosen. You know, it's not like I would walk down the street and look at you people and went, hey guys. It's not that kind of community. But that right there, like Dave shared, is God doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And really the richness in Alcoholics Anonymous is how different we all are, but that we're all tied together by this thing, and that we recover together. And having done that now a lot of different places, and I'll just share this. I went into an AA meeting last week where I felt, when I first walked in, even after just shy of being 25 years and then a month, I walked in and I thought, oh my God, what am I doing here? I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico last week, and I went into a meeting that was not listed as a young people's meeting in the meeting schedule online. I just popped it up, I hit the GPS, boom, it's close to my hotel. And so I went to the meeting, and I mean, it literally looked like AA daycare there. I mean, people there were so young, and luckily the guy that was chairing, who was by far the oldest person there at 31, he walked up to me, kind of that look on his face. I was like, hey man, I just saw it online, and I'll say it's okay, you know. And he said, yeah, sure, stay. And so the meeting was excellent, you know. And I'm listening to the one guy share who just turned 16, and I'm thinking, he was talking about the big book, and he tied like 14 pages together in like an almost PowerPoint presentation. And I was like, man, I need to talk to him after the meeting. Going up on the program over there. And so that's what I like, is that the language stays the same. And I do try this all the time, and it's not always prayerful, but a lot of times AA meetings, I'll close my eyes because it is such a joy to listen to people talk about Alcoholics Anonymous and not look at them. Because in that, I remove a lot of my prejudices and my fears and all that, and I can listen to you guys differently. So that's just something that I started doing, but I enjoy it. So, yeah.
Dave, I'll call it. I know that my way doesn't work for everybody, you know, and so I always give my guys a way out, you know. If it's not working for them, you know, I love them and I want the best for them, and I know that I will not, you know, I'm not hurt if somebody decides to go in a different direction. And I let them know that when it happens, I don't want to do any harm. You know, like Trent talked about earlier, that, you know, I'm their first close look at Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, so I want to make sure that I don't do any harm. But I think we are planting seeds. I'm looking at this little, is that yours, Evan?
Yeah.
This little seedling down here. And, you know, that's it right there. Hopefully the pot will get bigger and the plant will get bigger. And, yeah, I was thinking about my third step. I was about 6 months sober and I hadn't done my fourth step, you know, which means I was having a problem with the third step, right? And I started thinking about drinking. Not because all the things I'd done in the past were swimming around in my head. And I knew that taking a drink would quiet it, at least temporarily. And I'd gone to a meeting earlier, and I went to another meeting, and I left that meeting, and it still was there. And I came to a T-intersection, and my favorite bar was a mile one way, and the Oxford House was a mile the other way. And I said, God, please get me home tonight. And that was my third step prayer. It was that simple. And now I abandoned myself utterly to Him, because I didn't have anywhere else to turn at that point. And I got home, and I woke up the next morning, and without even thinking, I knew what to do. And I went to the library and started writing my fourth step. It was just like automatic. And Trent said, you know, for me, that was when the obsession was removed. I know now because I have not had a serious compulsion to drink since. And I know that who I asked to do that, you know. So I do speak about that with guys. I know that after I've done the first 9 steps, I wanted more spiritually at that point. And I was making coffee with a guy at New Day, and we were meeting there every morning. And one day I went over to his house and I said, you got a really nice house. And he said, oh, this isn't my house, this is God's house. He just lets me live here. And I said, wow, that's what I want. So I asked him to be my sponsor. He's been my sponsor the last 10 years, you know. And we have a different level of conversation than I've ever had with anybody, you know. He likes to say things like, where's God now? Keep God involved, you know. And it's always the same answer, you know. Come on, give me something, you know. But that's the answer, right? I mean, it's these simple actions and keeping God involved. Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, our last paragraph is on page 96. Do not be discouraged if the prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time with any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic the opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work with them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chances.
So that paragraph is more helpful for me in working with others than almost any other paragraph in the big book. Probably for some of the reasons I've already shared, but in the time that I got sober and where I got sober, people would say keep coming back and they would follow up quickly with if you want to. And I realized early on in Alcoholics Anonymous that the people that were really sober were not trying to convince me of anything. They were not. They were not arguing their points. They were not. They were just saying what they did. And they were saying, we got time if you want to learn how to do that. And if you don't, you won't be here anymore. And they didn't mean that in like a vindictive way, like get out of here. They just meant like, you'll go your own way. And that is entirely true. And it can be maddening. It's not for me as much anymore. But it can be maddening at times in sobriety. Especially when I've developed emotional attachments with people over periods of time. I sponsor a guy right now who just drank after 13 years. I've known him almost the whole time I've lived here. I know his parents. I know his family. I know his work. I know everything about him. I literally know everything about him. He relapsed. And today he said to me on the phone, "Why are you not calling me?" And there was a time where I called him more often, and we called each other mutually, and it hasn't been anything vindictive. I don't see him, and every time I talk to him, number one, he's mad at me, and that's unpleasant. But mostly, we're just doing different things. Drunk people generally don't like us. I don't know how many people have encountered them, but when people are drinking, like really drinking, we are not their first social call. And it's easy to sense that around people who, now I understand the hurt, and I understand the sense of loss and all that. I felt that when I got here. And so what I had to do was set aside that life completely and try this life. But there's no mixing. And I've seen people over the years try to mix. Of course, I have plenty of people in my life, business contacts and family and other relationships where people drink. But the alcoholics in my life, some of who I met in here and some of who God just throws in my way unmistakably, when they're drinking, I could be speaking in Sanskrit. It's just we don't meet up. And Alcoholics Anonymous sort of made no sense to me if I had not been ready to get sober. And I've never seen one person who gets it who's not ready. It seems like there'd be some middle ground there, but in my reading of how it works in the Big Book and all that, rarely we see a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path, let go absolutely, abandon yourself to God. Those are not middle-of-the-road statements. And clearly, it's good having somebody here who's been, somebody I've known a whole time been here. I'll remember sitting in the Easy Does Club and having people like Mutt saying, "Half measures don't get you half." And that is true. If you think you can do half of this and get half of the benefits, good luck, because I have not seen it yet and I've been looking. So all I can do is, my best in trying to carry the message and to be available. And if I'm available, God constantly just has put people in my life, and now my life is full of recovering men. My phone rings off the hook every day. And it's not because of me. That's just because that's the way this program works. So.
Thanks, John. Dave, I'm not calling.
Dave.
This is difficult for me at times when somebody is not drinking, but they're not growing, and they're not taking action, and we're working together. And I don't want to give up on anybody, I want to practice love and tolerance and talk about my drinking and what AA has done for me. But there have been a few times, and sometimes there are guys I've worked with that have gone out several times. And again, I don't want to give up on them, but my way is not working for them. So I have fired myself a couple of times. I've never fired anybody, but I have fired myself. But I'll continue to take their calls. I'll suggest somebody that might be able to help them and maybe has a different experience than me. But I tell you, it's difficult sometimes because there are other people that might benefit from the way I do the steps rather than somebody else's. I just know that like Trent said, it's not me. I'm not, if it works or it doesn't work, I just have to keep God involved and do the things that are suggested. And I do know that the more time we spend together, the better it works out. And so I do try to make myself available. And I do know that I never know which guy might get sober and which guy might not. And I'm almost always wrong about that. Mm-hmm. And I'm working with a guy right now. I've worked with him for 2 or 3 years. He drank several times. I think we did his third or fourth fifth step the other day. His background is one of power and control and industry, and And he's had a very difficult time, and he was a totally different guy last week. I don't know what happened. You know, all I know is something clicked for him. Something, you know, he came back enough, he did the work enough, he read the book enough, he called enough, he went to another meeting, something changed. And he has a totally different perspective. And it's just amazing to see and so beautiful. Thanks.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you very much. Well, that ends our readings for tonight. Let's give our panel a round. At this time, we're going to pass the Southern Tradition Basket. Every AA group ought to be self-supporting through county outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the Southern Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup, central office, local service, directorate, district areas, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might diverge from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. While the contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. At this time, are there any AA-related announcements? We have an announcement. Simple Actions is having the next dinner speaker on May 18th. The potluck dinner starts at 6 o'clock. Everyone's welcome, and we invite anyone who would like to bring a dish. That would be nice, too. Now, where our speaker is at 7, it's Justin S. from Richmond. There are some flyers over here on the table if anyone needs one. Okay, and now Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of our staff at the meeting. We're all home group members, right? Thank you. And newcomers, is there anyone here in the first 30 days of sobriety who would like to welcome you? We've got some newcomer packets over on the table here. You know, the red envelopes. And then there's other available literature available. The books have a small price, so the pamphlets are free. Just see a home group member after the meeting. In this group, we always have two people that will be up here at the front if you're interested in sponsorship. And tonight it's Leanne and Emma will be up here. If anyone has any questions about sponsorship or has any questions about anything, just go up and ask them tonight. Smokers, please use the buck cans provided outside and stay well away from the church. All meetings, this church has other groups that use the facility, so we don't want to cluster around the door. So we step back, and buck cans usually are right where the bicycle racks are. So it'd be a big help. All meetings are audio recorded, and the upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, we'd like to ask everyone who had an opportunity tonight to come up and thank our panel. It's always kind of a nice thing to say, thanks for being here. I'm sure I enjoyed it. And After we clean up tonight, everyone is encouraged and invited to attend the meeting after the meeting. We usually go out to dinner at Plaza del Sol, which is on Colonial Avenue and 22nd Street. Just go out here, hand your right, go to 22nd Street, and it's a Mexican place right on the corner. And I have someone who could read page 164 for us tonight.
My name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Evan.
I'm chewing gum, man, so I was reluctant, so bear with me. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
And
deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power,